Hey, I want to ask you this question to get started here in our series. We are in a series about neighboring, the art of neighboring, and today we're going to talk a little bit about neighboring, but I want to ask you this question. What do you do when you have a neighbor that you just can't seem to get along with? See, in a perfect world, everybody gets along in a perfect world. But we live in an imperfect world, we know that, where people disagree, things can go wrong, and oftentimes there's mess. When Danielle and I first moved to Keene, we lived in one space where we had neighbors right next to us, and you know, you kind of put the smile on, and you know, you hear noise at night, and like, you know, and you know, we had a little baby, but we moved across town out of the first place that we lived in to this condo, kind of a small condo. Anybody know where Papagallo's is? Okay, so we live right in that Chestnut Green condo area. And so we moved in, and it wasn't that long before we realized, like, okay, we have neighbors. There's neighbors that live above us. And this one particular neighbor had a whole thing of bonsai trees out on his patio balcony, and he liked to water them. Well, that's fine. I know trees need water to live. But he would water them, and the water would just seep down over the pots down onto our patio, which was right underneath him. And this happened regularly, dirty water coming down onto our patio set. We smiled and nodded. We put up with this. We complained to each other, but there was nothing ever said. Until one day, when we happened to be sitting in our patio chair and table, and the water just began to come down on us. And it was one of those moments where I asked, Jesus, am I really a Christian? Because I don't feel like one right now. Issues with neighbors. These are inevitable things, right? Like, they are going to happen. If you have neighbors, conflicts between neighbors are nothing new. And just so you know, I did ask that neighbor if there was something we could do, because we were directly under them, and he actually did come up with a solution. He kind of created this irrigation system where the water would shed off the sides. Still got on our stuff, but that was better than having it right on our stuff. So anyway, conflict is inevitable when it comes to neighbors. Just put any two people in close proximity to one another and you're bound to disagree over something. And so in a room with this many people, I just assume that either you have had issues with a neighbor, you currently have issues with a neighbor, or currently a neighbor has an issue with you. I know how this works. It works both ways. The question at hand is, I think for us in this community, as we look at neighboring, how will we respond to a neighbor in conflict the way that would honor Jesus, the way that he's asked us to love our neighbors as ourselves? This is where it gets really difficult. So I want to look today at the art of peacemaking. Peacemaking is part of what Jesus has in mind for us in loving our neighbors. So if you would turn with me to Matthew chapter 5. I'm going to jump around a little bit, but there are Bibles over on the side. If you don't have one, you can certainly grab one. These verses will be up on the screen today. Matthew chapter 5, and I'm just going to read verse 9. This is out of what's known as the collection of the Beatitudes in Matthew, and this is just a simple verse that I want to focus in on here for a second. It says in Matthew 5, 9, Jesus says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." You know, into a world that is ugly with tension, Jesus sends you and I, his kids, his followers, to be peacemakers. That's part of the MO of what it means to be a Christian in Jesus' mind. And we certainly haven't been given a choice as to what kind of world we get to live in, right? We don't have that choice. We just accept that this is the world we live in. And as bad as things may be, we have to recognize that this is the only world we have to live in. And if we're going to be true to Jesus, I think if we're going to live out his way in all of life, he says that we have to be peacemakers. It's literally part of our job description as followers of Jesus. Now, I want to be clear about a few things when it comes to peacemaking, because I think sometimes we have misconceptions about what this means. The first thing is this: peacemaking is not the absence of conflict. Peacemaking is not the absence of conflict. We can trick ourselves into thinking that avoidance of a problem is the same thing as peacemaking, and it's not. It's easier, absolutely, it's easier to just ignore a problem or to bury our heads in the sand and act as if the issues that exist don't exist. It's just easier to do that. But that strategy only masks the real problem. And it only continues that problem on, and that issue isn't going to go away when we do that. It's just going to remain there until it comes out somewhere else. So we're not instructed to run away from conflict. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying in the name of peacemaking. In fact, based on my own experiences, the art of peacemaking will most likely bring you into some level of conflict. I've been in plenty of situations where peacemaking was the goal, it was the initiative, and it brought in conflict. See, we may be tempted to hear Jesus' words, "Blessed are the peacemakers," and say, you know, oh, that sounds really nice. That would go really well on a bumper sticker or a mug. Peacemakers, right? It's cute. But peacemaking is not nice. Peacemaking is messy. It is oftentimes gut-wrenching work. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of emotional energy. It's like crossing a fast moving creek on slippery rocks. The journey is necessary. The work is risky. Sometimes you fall and you get bruised, and sometimes you fall in and don't get back up again. This is the risk sometimes of peacemaking. It's not always a bed of roses. It's not always what it sounds. Peacemaking is not always peaceful. That said, what did Jesus mean by being a peacemaker? Well, in Scripture, the word peace comes from the Hebrew word shalom. It's a Hebrew word. It was a word that was used for, in that time, for greeting or departing, much like our English hello and goodbye. It's a broad term. It was related to the wholeness of someone's physical and spiritual and emotional and relational health, their well-being. It meant perfect welfare, serenity, fulfillment, freedom from trouble, and a liberation from anything that that comes against contentment. So when a Jew would say to someone else, shalom, they were wishing on another the full presence and peace of all these things. They were wishing on someone else the fullness of health in their life. So a working definition of this idea of peacemakers could be this: someone who is actively seeking to reconcile people to God and to one another. It's a verb. It's an action item. It means to do or to make. It's a word that's bursting with energy, peacemakers. Notice that Jesus does not say in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are the peace wishers, or the peace hopers, or the peace dreamers, or the peace lovers, or the peace talkers, or one of my personal favorites, the good vibers. You know who you are. You know who you are. Jesus is saying here that peace has to be made. He's saying that it's actually an action. That peacemaking, it doesn't just happen by chance. He's saying that a peacemaker isn't passive. A peacemaker is that one who takes the initiative to make peace. It's actually a strong verb. The Apostle Paul, some people say that Paul was alive at the same time as Jesus, and I kind of like that idea because he just mimics Jesus so much in his writings. And Paul wrote most of the New Testament in the Bible. And so he's a pretty important guy. He wrote a lot of things, but he had some pretty specific things, some pretty specific instructions about the idea of peacemaking in his book to the Jesus people in Rome. And he says this in Romans chapter 12. You can go there with me if you want. It's going to be pretty fast, though. So Romans 12:18, he says this. It's a pretty famous verse. if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. It's important to realize that something peacemaking isn't is, again, that absence of conflict, right? It's also important to realize that sometimes peacemaking isn't possible. Sometimes peacemaking doesn't work. Paul recognizes this, I think, when he's kind of inferring that almost in this verse. Sometimes peacemaking doesn't always work. You and I can probably point to a number of instances where we actively pursued peace, and maybe it fell flat or it did not have the outcome that we were looking for. Sometimes peacemaking doesn't happen. We lived above another couple, or below another couple, when we were just about to leave Pennsylvania, and that's kind of our story. We left Pennsylvania, we moved up here in 2012 back to New Hampshire, where we were from, and feeling like really that God was calling us to come up to home, really, to come back to New England and to be part of what he was doing here in New England and the need that was here. But before we did, we lived in a condo that was really close to the church that I worked at in Pennsylvania, or Ascending Church. And it was like really nice. It was like a minute down the road from where I worked. So I would leave my office, like on a hot August summer day, not like today, I would like literally make a beeline from my office to my car, drive down the road, get lunch, you know, come back. You know, it was just really did not seem right at times, you know, but it was awesome. And usually, like for me, I hibernate in the summer months. If it's humid and hot, like I am just in AC, wherever I can find it, I just barricade myself away. But before that, we lived at this condo, and again, we had some new neighbors. They moved in, and again, not long into their tenure there, we realized, wow, we're going to have some issues because we have a brand new baby, our first, and she needs to sleep. Like, so when you decide to turn your vacuum on at 11 o'clock at night, that's not helping my baby, who's having trouble sleeping anyway, sleep. So this went on, you know, for a while, until it got to the point where we hear these sounds, you know, like we can't, I don't even know what they are. They had dogs, I know that. They must have been huge dogs because they were walking and they sounded like giants. I mean, I don't know what was up there, but it sounded like giants. And eventually I had to go and confront this issue. I'm gonna tell you how it went after we watch this video.
It means we make sound.
People think of neighborly noise as a nuisance, but we think of it as an art form.
We want the sounds to be different, but completely unrecognizable.
It just sounds like bowling balls. That can't be what it is, but that's what it sounds like.
Is it a bowling ball? Is it a metal barrel? You never know, because sometimes we get metal barrels.
You knew we were twisted, though. Julia is a fountain of creativity. Oh. She's a genius. She's so creative. Oh. Their ceiling is our stage. We're dancing across it.
Yes.
It is work. You know, we often take shifts to create the illusion that nobody here sleeps.
It sounds like a baby the size of a giant is learning how to walk.
A floor is but a movie screen to project the mind's eye.
And all of that hard work really pays off when we
need to meet our fans. There's a lot of noise going on up here. It kind of sounds like...
Sounds tough.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, some people might say what we do is passive aggressive.
Thank you.
That was probably one of my favorite videos of the whole year, I gotta tell you. I've watched that a lot, maybe you've seen it. Definitely worth watching many times. So this neighbor, very much similar to that. I'm not even joking, I'm not exaggerating. The bowling balls, when they did that, when I saw that for the first time, I was like, that's it, bowling balls. So one night, it was just too much, and like, our baby woke up, and it was like one of those situations, and it was like, oh, okay, I'm Jesus, and I hope I'm a Christian, but I left that, our apartment condo, and I literally went upstairs to, you know, make that long walk and knock on the door, and this was mid-vacuum, right? Like, vacuuming is happening, and I'm like, I'm upset, I'm frustrated, the baby's not sleeping well, they just woke up, I'm knocking on the door. And it's not light, it's a heavy knock. And they like stop the vacuum. They like pitter-pattered around the condo, never answered the door. And the next day I called over to the management at the condo place, and I just wanted to let them know what was going on. And they had already called. And the management said, you know, hey, if you have any conflicts with your neighbors, you need to let us know first, you know? Don't try to take anything into your own hands. So they obviously were scared. Maybe I knocked a little too hard. I don't know. Could have, maybe. You know, that was a situation, I think, where, like, well, I didn't really, it was super awkward after that. Like, you know, because I'd see them regularly, and, like, we never really kind of connected. But they understood, you know, like, the issue is that we had an infant, and it was just loud. I don't know why you got to vacuum at 11 o'clock at night every night, but, like, that's what it was. Here's the thing. The Apostle Paul is saying in this phrase, if possible, so far as it depends on you. I think as Christians, we have a God-given responsibility to pursue peace. I think that's our mandate, that's our MO, that's our description. Does that mean that we agree with everything others say? No. Sometimes we agree to disagree, hopefully agreeably. We're not always going to come to a conclusion, and we're not always going to see peace, but I think Paul is saying, as far as it depends on you, though, as a follower of Jesus, are you pursuing peace? Is it part of your agenda to seek and to pursue this peace? And so that's what I would say to you today. It has to be your agenda as a Christ follower to pursue peace. Here's a couple things that I think we could do, just proactively, like tangible things that I think we can do as we think about being a peacemaker. Not somebody that hopes for peace to happen, but is actually actively taking a step in this role. First thing is that we should talk to God. I think prayer is probably one of the most underestimated things when it comes to the idea of peacemaking. Amen. I know for me, I did not pray to God before I walked up those stairs. I was upset, I was angry. And how many times do we miss maybe the prompting of God to show us where we're wrong before we kind of go and point the finger at somebody else? I think we miss that a lot because we miss prayer. So I would just encourage you to think about that. Prayer needs to be part of the equation of peacemaking, a big part. And I believe this can give us way bigger perspective before we step out, before we make any moves. And it might even reveal the root cause of the problem. You know, I think Jesus is capable of revealing to us where the issue is. It's not always a guessing game. Sometimes he wants to reveal for us how he's working. So if you're open to his insight, you know, if you're willing to kind of step aside and allow time for God to speak before you act, I think that could really go a long way for us. I really do. I really think that could work. The second thing is that we should take the first step. This is something that I feel like God has shown me over the years, is that as peacemakers, we shouldn't be the ones to kind of passively wait for someone to maybe make peace with us. That maybe we take a step and make peace with someone else, or at least take the initiative to make peace with somebody else. And one of the hardest things to hear is that we, as Jesus people, are responsible to take the first step to reconciliation. That's like our thing. In fact, I think the community of believers should be known for being the first ones, the first responders. Now, perhaps you're asking yourself, well, why should I go to the person when they're the one that hurt me? And the answer that Jesus gives us is found in Matthew 18, 15. It says, and this is part of a string of verses that kind of really spell out, we're not going to do this justice at all here, but really how the art of reconciliation, really how you go and reconcile. And Matthew 18, 15, such a high value for this, I think, here in our church is that we look at this. And I'd encourage you to go to Matthew 18 and read the whole thing through and see how God has instructed us. But he says here, if your brother sins against you, go to him or go and tell him his fault. So go and actually bring up the problem. Between you and him alone. And if he listens to you, you have gained your brother. Now it goes on to talk about what happens if that doesn't happen. And there's a whole instruction there, and I think it's super critical and important that we look at that too. But basically, what he's saying here, Matthew, is you're supposed to make the first move. Peacemaking takes that initiative. They don't wait for someone to come to them. And that would be really nice, right? Like, that'd be comfortable. I'm going to wait till they come. It's ideal when someone recognizes how they've hurt you. It's ideal when someone acknowledges how they've hurt you and comes to you and makes that right. But Jesus is saying, I think here, don't hold your breath. I actually think he's, you know, Paul is saying, so far as it depends on you, not that person. Man, that's hard. That is super tough. Because in our humanness, we do not like that. Because when we've been wronged by someone else, we desire for that person to make it right. But that's not what he's saying here. So far as it depends on you, live at peace with every man. Conflict is never resolved accidentally. That first step might be you writing a letter, you know, calling someone up, giving them a visit. These are the first steps. These are the things that we might be able to do to take some action here. If someone has wronged you, I just want to just be totally personal here today. If someone has wronged you, or if you've wronged someone, take action. Take action. Own that. Take action. Go and make that right. Don't wait. Don't wait. Time in the situation of reconciliation and peace is the biggest enemy of this process. Biggest enemy. I think. I believe that peace often accompanies our action. And pray, God, I want peace. I want reconciliation. Will you do this? Will you make this possible? Third, tell the other person how you feel. Let's say you get to the place where you're actually able to have that conversation. And when you make the first step and speak to the other person, before you speak, remember the words of Solomon as he wrote in Proverbs. Just a wisdom snippet here from Proverbs 15. He says, a gentle answer turns away anger, but a harsh word stirs up wrath. That's something that I've really thought about and not gotten perfect, believe me, over the years. But it is true, right? Like, it's disarming when we respond as peacemakers with a quiet word rather than a harsh word. I've seen that happen. I have seen people disarmed when it's a gentle, quiet response. And that doesn't mean that's cowardly or, you know, you don't have a voice. It just means that you've got the heart of Jesus coming through. And that's what we long for, right, as a community. We want to be peacemakers. We want the end result to be reconciliation and restoration. Are we doing good in the process? I think we can take a lot to learn here. Do your best to empathize with someone's feelings. Man, that's really listen to what is being said. Listen to what they're saying. Consider their situation. Attack the problem, not the person. Another difficult thing. And remember this, in the process, reconciliation is more crucial than being right. Reconciliation, the end goal that he has in mind here, maybe with a neighbor or a friend or a spouse, that reconciliation piece is more important than being right. That's tough. I like to be right. Maybe you do too. There's something that feels good about being right. But if you don't gain reconciliation, you haven't won anything. Now, Paul is clear, again, so far as it depends on you, kind of acknowledging that peace isn't always possible. But if it's dependent on you, are you doing your best to make peace? So here's a question, just as we wrap up here, as we consider how does this work out, I know all of us here in this room today, we can point to a situation or something in our life currently or in the past where you can kind of look at this and say, yeah, this makes sense. Like, this is hard stuff. This is what Jesus wants. Is there a conflict in your neighborhood that you could be a peacemaker in proactively right now? Is there a neighbor that you, a physical neighbor or somebody that is just in your life, in your path, that you're being prompted to make peace with? You know, we've only been in our house for two years now, and we already can identify the brokenness and the conflict and the mess in our neighborhood. You know, you can already look in our neighborhood and tell where the pockets of mess are and where the pockets of broken relationships are. And I believe Jesus is calling us into those. So far as it depends on you, be at peace with all that. And bring peace, bring shalom to those spaces, your work, your neighborhoods, your marriage. Some 700 years ago, a remarkable man was born. And although he was the son of an Italian cloth merchant and destined to be a knight, he forsook the path of wealth and fame, choosing instead to wear a ragged cloak tied with a rope borrowed from a scarecrow. He spent his days preaching and giving to others, and he chose to live in utter poverty. History records that he was a noble and a kind and a humble man. We know him today as Saint Francis of Assisi. And centuries after his death, someone translated one of his prayers into English, and it was later set to music. I'm not going to sing it, but I'm going to read it for you. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, and to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. Why don't we stand together? We're going to enter into a time of communion. I'm going to invite our band to come up. And then we're going to sing a little bit after this, but I just want to say a couple things quickly here about St. Francis. St. Francis believed not in his own strength. Actually, he's pointing to the ability of someone else. It's not that St. Francis was a great man in the sense that there was a greater man. His name is Jesus. Jesus, as you know, went by many names, Messiah, Lord, King, but he also went by the Prince of Peace. Jesus is the author of peace. Jesus saw the gravity of our problem, and he refused to sweep it under the rug or to stick his head in the sand. Jesus faced conflict head on, knowing that a drastic solution would be the only thing that could happen, that the only thing that could work to make peace. Jesus made peace by going to a violent cross. The life of Jesus was saturated with his mission to bring the peace of God and to initiate the healing relationships of peace with God. He paid an enormous price for us to experience this peace. And interestingly enough, Jesus' word for peacemaker in Matthew is the same word that Paul uses to describe how Jesus has made peace between us and with God. It's found in Colossians chapter 1, verse 20. It says this, "Through Christ God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross." That sounds very against itself, doesn't it? Making peace by the blood of his cross. It sounds like a violent action for a peaceful solution. Jesus realized that the only way that we could have peace with God the Father is that a violent action needed to take place somewhere. If you look back through the Old Testament, the violent action is happening. They're sacrificing. They're making sacrifices for entire families. But Jesus comes along and says, "I will be the final sacrifice. I will, for once and for all, go to a cross in a violent way to buy back for you the peace that you don't already have with God." And he did that for us. And so today we're going to celebrate that act. It's interesting to celebrate that act. We're not celebrating the fact that Jesus went to a violent cross. What we're celebrating is the fact that he purchased and won for us a certain level of freedom and salvation. It's a horribly violent, crude way to die. There's nothing pretty about it. Sometimes there's nothing pretty about making peace. And Jesus knew this, and he still went to a cross because he knew it was so important for us that he was willing to do it. Are we willing to seek peace with others? I think he gives us that right. So my question is, do you have peace today? Do you have peace? Do you know the one that gives peace? And if you don't, I would love to talk to you. I would love to have a conversation, even after our service today, about how you can know that peace.